This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on December 6, 2007. Should you have questions after listening to this recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
I would like to convene the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission for Thursday, December 6, 2007. I'd like to begin with an apology. This meeting was delayed because of myself. I ended up being stuck behind a very bad auto accident, which stopped all traffic on the road I had chosen to get in here. So I apologize for the delay for everybody and wished I could have avoided that, but I could not. We are going to begin with a period of the meeting dealing with career service recognition, and for that, I think I'm going to move to the podium. This mic is on as well. Before we begin the traditional work at the open meeting, I wanted to take a moment to honor some of the individuals whose hard work and dedication to the public good have made this agency a success. While the commissioners serve as the public face of the FEC, the truth is that it is the learning, skill, hard work, and dedication of our staff that makes this agency run. Today, we wanted to honor those who have exceeded 10, 20, and 30 years of service to the federal government, either through their employment here at the FEC, in the military, or in other federal agencies. We're going to begin by recognizing those with 10 years of service. I will read their names, they will come forward, and the staff director will present them with a certificate of their service to both the federal government and the FEC, and a small token of our appreciation. We will then have a picture taken of us as a group. Oops, it's not the status, Mr. Sigmund and our general counsel, Ms. Duncan. I apologize. Problems with my glasses is that I'm only worth looking down. and then we will proceed to honor those with 20 years of service, and finally with those of 30 years of service to the federal government. I would like to begin with those of 10 years of service with Marianne Abley, Nicole Burgess.
Thank you.
Mary Beth DeVoe. Karen Sensei, Michael Hartstock, Deborah Holloway, Christopher Huey,
thank you.
Daniel Kent, Danita Lee, John Pizzella. April Sands, Mark Schonkweiler, Wade Savonik, David Taylor, Cynthia Tompkins, and James Wilson. Vice Chairman, can join me for the photograph.
Just in case.
Those who have 20 years of federal service. Tony Buckley. Terry Calvert, Katrina Clark, Leroy Clay Jr., Marie Dixon, D. Patrick Donahoe, Donnie Harris, Gwendolyn Holmes, Delaney Painter, Jamal Gilbert, Joanna Savara, Stephanie Watson. If we could gather briefly for a picture. Finally, those who have 30 years of federal service. James Allen. Alex Bonowitz. Alex Bonowitz. Mara Calloway. Jacqueline Crawford. Cynthia Dicer, Alva Miller, Angela Dillard, Stanley Moore, Cynthia Myers. Edward Ryan. John Woodhead Worth.
Congratulations. It's a pleasure.
Tallest in the back.
Tallest in the back, yeah.
Family.
That's not me.
Family should be in the back there.
Okay, the next item on our agenda involves the correction and approval of the minutes. Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move approval of the minutes of an open meeting of the Federal Election Commission of Thursday, November 29, 2007, as set forth in Agenda Document 0785.
The Vice Chairman has so moved. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Madam Secretary, the Vice Chairman's motion has been adopted by a vote of 5-0. The next item on our agenda involves a draft advisory opinion 2007-23 from the Independence Party of New York. We have Joshua Bloom and Ron Catwan from the General Counsel's Office. Counsel, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Independence Party of New York requested the advisory opinion before you in agenda document number 07-81. The request seeks recognition of the IPNY as a state committee of a political party under Section 100.14A of the Commission's regulations. The draft concludes that, based on all the evidence submitted, the IPNY does qualify as a state committee of a political party. First, the IPNY is a political party under Section 100.15, because certain individuals who qualify as candidates under Section 100.3A1 appeared on the 2006 ballot of the state of New York as the IPNY's candidates for election to office in the United States Senate and the House of Representatives. Second, the IPNY rules establish a comprehensive organizational structure for the IPNY and detail the responsibilities of its officials. Further, the IPNY rules delineate activities commensurate with the day-to-day operations and functions of a political party at the state level and are consistent with the state party rules examined in previous situations in which the commission has recognized the state committee status of a political organization. Finally, pursuant to New York State election law, the IPNY has acquired ballot status as the official independence party of the state of New York. We received no comments on the draft, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Comments? Discussion? Vice Chairman Mason.
I move approval of the draft advisory opinion.
The Vice Chairman is so moved. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Madam Secretary, the Vice Chairman's motion has been adopted by a vote of 5-0. Congratulations, Council. The next item on our agenda is Draft Advisory Opinion 2007-24, Jim Berkey and Jeff Walls. We have a late submitted document here. Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move suspension of our rules concerning the timely submission of documents so that we may consider a memorandum from the General Counsel setting forth Draft Advisory Opinion 2007-24.
Very good. The Vice Chairman is so moved. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Madam Secretary, the Vice Chairman's motion has been adopted by a vote of 5-0. We have Stacey Shin and Amy Rothstein from the General Counsel's Office. Counsel, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Commissioners. The draft advisory opinion before you responds to a request by Jim Berkey and Jeff Walls. Mr. Berkey and Mr. Walls are Republican and Democratic candidates, respectively, for the 5th Congressional District in Wisconsin. They plan to campaign together whenever possible through the primary and general elections and ask questions regarding their joint fundraising and joint campaign activities. The draft concludes that Mr. Berkey and Mr. Walls' principal campaign committees may engage in joint fundraising activities as proposed because they satisfy the basic requirements in the Commission's joint fundraising regulations. The draft also concludes that the committees must allocate the cost of joint fundraising activities according to the percentage of funds received by each campaign. Joint campaign expenses that do not involve the solicitation of contributions must be attributed to each committee according to the benefit reasonably expected to be derived. In addition, the draft addresses several methods of paying for joint fundraising and joint campaign expenses under the Act and Commission regulations. We have not received any comments on the draft, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Very good. Thank you. Comments? Questions? Commissioner Von Spakovsky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will move that we accept and approve the draft AO as it has been put forward by the Office of General Counsel, which is Agenda Document 07-83. I will have to say, I think this is one of the oddest requests we have received in my time here. We often get questions about joint fundraising, but I don't think I've ever seen one where members of two opposing parties are going to campaign directly. But I move we accept the opinion.
Very good. Commissioner Von Spakovsky has moved the approval of the draft. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Madam Secretary, Commissioner Von Spakovsky's motion has been adopted by a vote of 5-0. Thank you, Council. The next item on our agenda is Draft Advisory Opinion 2007-26 involving State Representative Aaron Schock and Citizens for Schock. We have a late submitted document. Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move suspension of our rules concerning the timely submission of documents so that we may consider a memorandum from the General Counsel setting forth Draft Advisory Opinion 2007-26.
Very good. The Vice Chairman is so moved. Any discussion on the motion? Commissioner Von Spakovsky.
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to make a slight amendment. I'm sorry, this is just a late document. I'm sorry.
Okay. It's easy to move forward. Any discussion on the motion to suspend our rules? Hearing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye. Those opposed? Madam Secretary, the Vice Chairman's motion has been adopted by a vote of 5-0. Now on to the substance. We have Jonathan Levin and Ron Catwan from the General Counsel's Office. Mr. Levin, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. The Commission has received a request for an advisory opinion from counsel for Illinois State Representative Aaron Schock and his state candidate campaign committee regarding donations to non-federal accounts of state and local party committees, non-federal candidates, and 501c3 organizations, and regarding refunds to donors to the state campaign committee. Earlier this year, Mr. Schock ended his campaign for re-election in 2008 to the state legislature and became a candidate for the U.S. House. The committee that Mr. Schock had maintained for his state campaigns, Citizens for Schock, the Schock Committee, has paid all of his expenses for his previous three state campaigns, ceased to raise funds prior to his becoming a federal candidate, and retains a surplus of funds raised from the 2006 and 2008 campaigns. The Schock Committee is established, financed, maintained, or controlled by a federal candidate. 2 U.S.C. Section 441IE1B and 11 CFR 300.62 limit the source of funds that may be donated by the committee to non-federal candidates and party accounts. Thus, any funds donated by the Schock Committee must not have been received by the Schock Committee from donations to it exceeding the $2,300 or $5,000 limit set out under 2 U.S.C. 441AA, or from sources prohibited by the Act. Such funds must also be permissible under Illinois law, which does not have the same limits and prohibitions as the Act. The draft concludes that the Schock Committee may donate its federally permissible funds without limit to the non-federal committees, so long as such donations are permitted by Illinois law. The draft makes clear that the Schock Committee may not avail itself of the looser provisions of 2 U.S.C. Section 441IE2 and 11 CFR 300.63 for donations to the successor Republican state representative candidate in Mr. Schock's legislative district. Under certain conditions, the Schock Committee may refund donations of any amount to its donors to the extent permitted by state law. If permitted by state law, the Schock Committee may also donate funds to Section 26 U.S.C. Section 501c3 organizations that do not engage in activities in connection with any election without being subject to the provisions of 2 U.S.C. 441IE. Finally, if state law permits, the Schock Committee may also retain the funds indefinitely.
Thank you. Any discussion? Commissioner Von Spakovsky.
I apologize for jumping the gun earlier, Mr. Chairman. I just have one slight change, and I don't think it's a substantive change, Mr. Chairman. It's simply I recommend we delete one particular sentence in the draft opinion because I think it may lead to a little bit of confusion. I mean, we make it very clear in answering the five main questions here that for the purposes of making contributions to another candidate, a political committee, a party, that they have to use a reasonable accounting method to identify only federally permissible funds. They don't have to use federally permissible funds for either the refunds or the charitable contributions. And on page 10 of the draft, lines 5 and 6, we have a sentence that reads, "The Schock Committee must use the reasonable accounting method adopted for its other disbursements to identify the funds that are to be refunded." I know what the General Counsel was trying to say here, but I think a reading of that could cause one to believe that you have to use a reasonable accounting method to also determine the other funds, not the federally permissible ones. And I think if we just delete that one sentence and leave out the sentence that follows, that the funds identified to be refunded may not also form the basis to fund another disbursement under the proposals outlined in questions 1, 2, 3, and 5, that it gets the meaning across. I think there is a mistake, though, even in that last sentence, which is I don't think 5 should be included in that. It ought to be just 1, 2, and 3 because those are the donations or contributions where you can only use federally permissible funds. You don't have to for number 5, which is the charitable donations. And in fact, we don't say that. If you look at the answer to number 5, we specifically don't say you can only use federally permissible funds, which is something we make the point of saying in 1, 2, and 3. So to summarize, I move that we delete the sentence on lines 5 and 6 of page 10, starting with the Schock Committee. Leave in the sentence on line 7 and 8, but change on line 8 so that it reads in questions 1, 2, and 3, and delete N5.
Okay.
And my understanding is that I believe your office had, I think, spoken with General Counsel's office, and I think they were okay with that.
Okay, changes. We'll start first with Madam Secretary. Is the motion sufficiently clear for your purposes? Counsel, thoughts on this suggested change?
Well, I think there's been a discussion, and we are okay, with it.
Commissioner Weintraub.
I think I'm confused by this. I don't know how. I mean, you have two pots of money. You've got your federally permissible funds and your non-federally permissible funds. You can't use a reasonable accounting method to identify the federally permissible funds without using the same method to identify the non-federally permissible funds. Because if you're not using the same accounting method to figure out what funds are permissible and what funds aren't, and therefore what your options are with these various pots of money, then how would one identify the non-federally permissible funds other than through a reasonable accounting method? I'm just confused.
I can respond to that, but the answer to that is, and I'll give you an example. If they decide they want to give $10,000 in political contributions, so that's $10,000 that they can only use federally permissible funds, and they have $100,000 in their account. The way this is written now, I think anyone reading this is going to get the impression, well, they have to use a reasonable accounting method to figure out where the entire 100,000 came from. I don't think that's the correct answer. The correct answer is if all they want to do is give $10,000 in political contributions, they have to use a reasonable accounting method to identify $10,000 out of the 100,000 they have that they know is federally permissible. They then make that contribution, and the other 90,000, if they're going to use it for the charitable contributions or for refunds, which they don't have to use federally permissible amounts for, they don't have to go through and do an accounting and figure out where that other 90,000 came from. All they have to do is figure out where the 10,000 came from that they want to use for the political contributions.
But if they don't use a reasonable accounting method, how would they know, for example, to whom to refund the money, which is what this talks about, is identifying funds to be refunded. So, for example, would it be okay for him to refund the money only to those donors who had given him assurances that they were then going to take the refunded money and use it for some other purpose that he found acceptable? I don't think so. I think he could say, well, you know, the last 20 donors or whatever it is, until I run out of funds, I'm just going to go backwards through the list of refunding the donations. So I'm a little concerned that if you don't have some requirement of a reasonable accounting method, then that leaves the door open to an unreasonable accounting method.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't see the proposal taking the Vice Chairman, or I'm sorry, Commissioner Von Spakovsky's proposal taking us there. I mean, my sense was that it was more limited in its scope and was simply seeking to discern that you know, in those funds that would remain within our regulatory regime, that they had to use a reasonable accounting method under our terms, and to the degree that the funds were going to move outside of our regulatory regime, they could use a different accounting method. The way it's written now, they have to use the same accounting method throughout. So presumably it would allow them to use FIFO, you know, in one method and LIFO in the other, and we wouldn't be regulating them to the degree that they were moving those funds outside of our regulatory board. We wouldn't be commanding which accounting system they use to did I get that wrong?
No, okay. We've made it clear the same accounting method has to be used for all disbursements, and regardless of what language we use, I think Commissioner Weintraub is correct. We would have to know which ones are not permissible either, particularly because we're not talking about one transfer. We are talking about perhaps many transfers.
Okay. Well, again, so I guess the problem, to the degree that the fact pattern involved a conspiracy on the part of the campaign and the people that were receiving refunds to then rechannel those monies in other ways, it would seem to involve a different set of fact patterns than what we would traditionally be concerned with here. Vice Chairman Mason?
Well, I'm a little confused. First of all, I think the example Commissioner Weintraub gave doesn't really have anything to do with an accounting method. In other words, the sort of conditional refunds or whatever, I wouldn't treat as an accounting method. But the problem I'm having is I think I agree with where Commissioner Fons-Pakovsky is in theory, which is our interest is limited to the funds that have to be federal. And if the committee wants to use only a limited portion of its funds as federal, then they can use the FIFO method and they can identify that much federal money. And at that point, they can stop counting. And once they've stopped counting and stopped making disbursements for federal purposes, then and they have money left, then for these other two categories, for the 501c3 monies and the refunds, it seems to me we don't have an interest. And that money may well be all state money, or it may be a mix of federally eligible and state eligible money. But I don't know at that point why we would care or what interest the commission would have, what interest under the FECA would be violated if, for instance, they decided to go and flip the method. As long as they segregated off the federally permissible amounts for those limited purposes, then, for instance, for the 501c3 contributions, there isn't really any accounting method. And I'm not sure why for the state refunds, from a FECA perspective, the candidate couldn't simply be arbitrary. I mean, he might want to refund to the first donors, figuring, well, the people who supported him when he first got in are more important to him than the people who contributed later. He may want to make refunds to all the small donors. He may want to make refunds to all the large donors. And it seems to me there's no FECA interest at that point. The interest we have is in making sure he's got federally permissible funds and identifying those.
Commissioner Fons-Pakovsky?
That's exactly my point. The Vice Chairman has put it in a better way, but that's exactly what I'm trying to do by deleting that one sentence and leaving the other one.
Okay. So it doesn't seem unreasonable to me, but other discussion on the motion? Okay. Commissioner Fons-Pakovsky has moved adoption of draft advisory opinion 2007-26 with the amendments he's indicated at the table involving the leading of the language on page 10. Any discussion? All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Madam Secretary, if you can record, Commissioner Fons-Pakovsky's motion has been adopted by a vote of 4-1 with Commissioner Weintraub dissenting. The next matter, Council. Oh, sorry, Commissioner Weintraub.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, in a way, this entire opinion was a little bit frustrating because if the candidate had had the foresight to get rid of his funds before he became a federal candidate, then we wouldn't have had an interest in any of this, and he could have done pretty much whatever he wanted under state law. So I guess the lesson for people who have state campaign funds and are contemplating running for federal office is that the best thing they can do is to figure out what they want to do with their leftover campaign funds in their state account first before they announce to the world they're running for federal office.
Okay. Council, thank you very much. The next item on our agenda involves draft advisory opinion 2007-29. Representative Jesse L. Jackson is the requester there. Mr. Vice Chairman, we also have a late submitted document here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move suspension of our rules concerning the timely submission of documents so that we may consider a memorandum from the General Counsel setting forth draft advisory opinion 2007-29.
Good. Good. The Vice Chairman is so moved. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye. Aye. Those opposed? Madam Secretary, the Vice Chairman's motion has been adopted by a vote of 5-0. We have Richard Yule and Amy Rothstein from the General Counsel's Office on this one. Yule, please proceed at your convenience.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The draft before you in advisory opinion 2007-29, set forth in agenda document 07-86, responds to a request from Representative Jesse Jackson, Jr. Representative Jackson asks whether he may donate funds from his principal campaign committee to the campaign committee of his wife, Ms. Sandy Jackson, who is seeking election to a political party position of the committeeman of the 7th Ward in the Cook County Democratic Party. The draft concludes that the proposed donation would be a permissible use of campaign funds. The Act and Commission regulations permit transfers to political party committees and donations to state and local candidates, and the use of funds proposed in the request is analogous. The draft further concludes that the Act and Commission regulations do not limit the amount of funds that Representative Jackson may donate for this purpose. We've not received any comments on this request or the draft. I would be happy to address any questions.
Good. Counsel, thank you. Any comments, questions, discussion? Commissioner Walther.
I'm probably going to vote against it because it seemed to me that we have a provision here for state and local candidates and it doesn't fit in, and then you slide off that to a minor degree, and it seems to me that at that point you can draw an implication that was not one of the areas for which there would have been a delineation. And then secondly, I think when you get to a spouse's campaign in office that can benefit you and perhaps augment that benefit by being a spouse, and perhaps inferentially at least affecting one financially by lessening the campaign burden, it just gets a little too close for me, so I'll probably just vote against it. And I understand the rationale. I was a little more persuaded by the first draft of OGC.
Okay. Other discussion? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to vote for it. I also thought a lot about it. When Congress decided to amend 439A, it had a in the old days there was this any lawful purpose provision. They took it out, then they put it back in, and it must mean something that they put it back in. They considered actually just having a list of you can only use your excess campaign funds for X, Y, Z, and Q, and in any event you can't use it for any personal use. And they decided not to do that. They decided to add in the any lawful purpose. So, you know, that's the catch-all provision. It was added in knowingly by Congress. And, does it benefit the candidate to have his spouse take an active role in politics? Perhaps. We've certainly gone a long way down that road. We have the current president had the benefit of having a former president campaign for him and raise funds for him, and we have certainly at least one candidate in the current race who benefits from what some people would say is very attractive spouse. I'm talking, of course, of Dennis Kucinich. I think everybody ought to be elected on their and some might argue that Congressman Jackson himself benefits by virtue of having had a famous father. You know, that's there are a number of members of Congress who are former who are the children of or spouses of former members of Congress. It's not illegal, and I think that while I am. I try to be very tough on personal use cases, and I think it's a very important provision in the law. And I thought about it a lot. When I read this answer, to me it seems like it is the legally correct answer. And as commissioners, that is the only thing that we can do, but to come up with the legally correct answer, even if sometimes it makes us feel like, gee, I don't know, maybe that doesn't feel quite right, but I think it's right on the law. I think the lawyers got it right. It's the right answer on the law, and that's why I'm going to vote for it.
Okay. Other discussion? Thoughts? Vice Chairman Mason.
I'd move approval of the draft advisory opinion.
Okay. The Vice Chairman is so moved. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
Nay.
Madam Secretary, the Vice Chairman's motion has been adopted by a vote of 4-1, with Commissioner Walther dissenting. Counsel, thank you very much. The last item on our the last advisory opinion on our agenda today is Draft Advisory Opinion 2007-25 involving Holland and Knight. We have Albert Kiss and Ron Catwan from the General Counsel's Office. Counsel, please proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, and thank you. Holland and Knight is a law firm and is organized as a limited liability partnership under Florida law. Holland and Knight recently elected to be taxed as a corporation rather than as a partnership for federal tax purposes. Holland and Knight is treated and will continue to be treated as an LLP under Florida law and the law of the other states in which it operates. Holland and Knight will be taxed as a partnership in Massachusetts and Florida, although it will be taxed as a corporation in the other states in which it operates. Holland and Knight asks whether it is a corporation or a partnership under the Act and Commission regulations, and whether it may administer and financially support the Holland and Knight Committee for Effective Government as its SSF. The agenda document before you, number 0782, presents two alternative drafts. Draft A concludes that Holland and Knight is a partnership and not a corporation for purposes of the Act and Commission regulations, because Holland and Knight is an LLP under Florida law. Draft A also concludes that because Holland and Knight is a partnership, it may not administer or financially support the committee as its SSF. Instead, any administrative and financial support to the committee would constitute a contribution subject to the Act's amount limitations. Draft B concludes that the same rationale that supports the Commission's treatment of LLCs electing corporate tax treatment also supports a conclusion that Holland and Knight is a corporation under the Act. Because Holland and Knight is a corporation, Draft B concludes that Holland and Knight may treat the committee as its SSF and may pay the costs for administering the committee and for soliciting contributions to the committee. However, as a corporation, Holland and Knight may no longer make contributions to the committee. We received one comment on the agenda document. I'd be happy to respond to any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Discussion on the two drafts before us. Motions on any draft before. And Commissioner Von Spakovsky.
Hate to be the first volunteer, Mr. Chairman, but Mr. Chairman, I support draft B. I mean, we, in the late 90s, adopted a specific regulation that says it's 110.1, an LLC that elects to be treated as a corporation by the IRS shall be considered to be a corporation pursuant to our regulations. Now, at the time, we apparently adopted this as an LLC. In our E&J, we set out, you know, a very good reason for doing this. This is contained in draft B, and put out a very good reason as to why we were going to go by what their federal tax status is. Now, there's almost no difference between an LLP and an LLC. The chief difference is that in some states, LLPs can only be used by certain professions, like ours, being a lawyer, or accounting firms. But essentially, they're the same animal, and there is no substantive legal difference for us to treat the two differently. You know, right now, under our regulations, we say that if you're a partnership, but, you know, you're an LLC partnership and you elect to be treated as a corporation by the IRS, we'll treat you as a corporation under all of our rules and regulations. Here, Holland and Knight is an LLP, but they've elected with the IRS to be treated as a corporation with all of the tax consequences that that brings. And there's no reason for us to treat them any differently than LLC. I think one of the reasons that our reg may not have covered this. I think LLPs were relatively new phenomena. They didn't really come about until the late 90s, right at the time when we were considering this regulation. And I probably shouldn't say this, but the FEC tends to sometimes be a little behind in when it gets regulations done on new legal developments. And I just can't think of any kind of substantive legal reason that we could have to not treat them exactly the same as we treat LLC. So I support draft B.
Okay. Other discussion? Commissioner Weintraub.
Oh, I hate to be disagreeable, but I'm going to support draft A because an LLP is a partnership. And our regulation says that we can treat LLCs according to their tax status, but it doesn't say we can treat LLPs depending on their tax status. We could amend the regulation, and then we could, you know, and maybe we should, but we haven't. And these LLPs have been out there for a while now. So I think we ought to stick with you know, it's a partnership. It's a partnership.
Commissioner Walther.
I'm persuaded that draft B is a better draft because even though we use the word partnership, it really is a hybrid animal, and you can be either. It's much like the you know, the LLC situation, and I don't see a policy reason why they shouldn't be treated identically under, in our eyes, if they both are being treated like corporations under the IRS, and the federal government permits that status. So the only reason that I can see for not doing is that it's not a regulation yet, but since we have a regulation that deals with an entity in such an identical way, it seems to me that perhaps we should go ahead and approve this, and I would suggest we adopt a regulation, but that's kind of the way it sits with me at this point.
Okay. Other thoughts? Vice Chairman Mason?
I also prefer draft B. I'm just appreciating the differences among commissioners and as to formal and functional approaches. Different issues come before us. Sometimes differs, but and the principal reason is looking at the intent of the act and the court decisions in terms of why we're limiting the corporate form, and it seems to me that the combination of limited liability and the tax treatment put together amounts to the sum total of the concerns that Congress had in limiting and regulating corporations differently and that courts have recognized. And so I think from that functional perspective, this is a duck.
Okay. I mean, I share Commissioner Weintraub's views, and I think she said them succinctly and clearly. We have a regulation in place. We could amend it and expand it to cover other kinds of entities, but we have not. We have traditionally, and I think the draft A more closely hews to our precedent in this area, which puts us probably in an awkward place at the end of all of this. But other thoughts, comments, suggestions? Vice Chairman Mason.
Could counsel's office help us out as to what they believe would be the effect of a failure to render an opinion?
Well, Mr. Chairman, we would send a letter to the requester with the agenda document and recounting whatever votes might be taken and a statement saying that it concludes our consideration of the advisory opinion. And I think, as everybody has noted, there are other options for delving into LLP area in if the commission were so inclined at some point in the future.
Mr. Chairman Mason,
let me try to put it a little different way. I take it that Holland and Knight now has a political fund.
I think there is a political committee out there, Mr. Vice Chairman, that is currently registered as a non-connected committee. And what they would like to do is to be able to make that, to, if you will, file a new statement of organization, making them into a connected committee, and from that point forward, the Holland and Knight partners would not be, the Holland and Knight partnership would not be attributing any contributions to the partnership because it would be treated as a corporation. So from that point forward, the
What I'm trying to get at is at the present time, if they have this non-connected committee,
yes,
would a determination as to their corporate status affect their ability to continue to have a non-connected committee? In other words, assuming that they were properly treated as a corporation, would it be legal for them to, for employees of the corporation to continue to run and manage a non-connected committee?
I'm hesitating because if you're talking about employees of the corporation, if they were volunteers on their own time, but if they're on corporate time, administrative and solicitation expenses, that could all be done for a connected PAC, but not for a non-connected PAC.
What's the consequence of assuming that's being done now under the rubric of a partnership? What's the consequence? You know, are we seeing reports of in-kind contributions from the partnership for the management of this ostensibly non-connected committee?
Well, I think we have been looking at this more in a going forward mode as opposed to what may have been the case in the past. They only just became an LLP, my understanding is, on October 1st. So it may be that while waiting to hear from us, they're in a waiting mode. They're not necessarily.
I understand, but we had, I believe it was a Pillsbury advisory opinion, where we told them how they could manage a PAC that was somehow associated with a partnership. Is that correct?
I'm sorry. I was.
In the Pillsbury AO, we
yes.
told them how they could manage a PAC that was somehow associated with the partnership.
We spoke to the permissibility of the use of a payroll deduction system for partners of Pillsbury to donate, to contribute rather, to the PAC. And we concluded that that was permissible in the Pillsbury.
And the PAC had simply had to reimburse for the costs of the payroll system.
I believe that's right.
And I suppose by extending that rationale to a corporation, we'd say they couldn't do a reimbursement, but they could do some sort of advance payment.
Corporation can make an advance payment to a separate
territory. No, the political committee would have to make an advance payment to the corporation.
Oh, to the corporation.
Because it couldn't do a reimbursement.
Yes.
Like any other.
So it'd be a vendor.
Well, as a corporation, we'd be in it.
The problem I'm trying to get at is twofold. One is presumably we're if we fail to render an opinion and there's this, you know, legally uncertain status, there's at least theoretically some risk to the entity here by proceeding in any fashion at all. In other words, if you have three commissioners that say, well, this is a corporation, you have two that say this is a partnership, and they go on and they try to manage a political fund of some sort, whether ostensibly non-connected or not, then certain consequences flow to that. And if, in fact, they're a partnership, there are certain things that they could do that partnership employees and the partnership could do vis-a-vis an ostensibly non-connected political committee. If they're a corporation, there are a different set of rules that would apply, and that's what I'm trying to explore, is that what's the risk to the corporation here and going forward? It's one thing when we fail to render an opinion and it's obvious that there's some sort of pre-existing structure or method that that the entity can fall back on. And the problem I'm having here is that there may not be some pre-existing structure that they can fall back on. And then the second thing that is kind of embedded in that is for those of us who think that this is a corporation and should be treated as such, whether we can find a way to give a green light for Holland & Knight to proceed in some fashion or other without conceding the corporate status point.
Counsel.
Well, it's a tough question, Mr. Vice Chairman, but I think that we do have the partnership regulation, and they are entitled to rely on it because they are right now a partnership under the state law, putting aside what their IRS election may be. So if they were to proceed along the lines of considering themselves a partnership under the campaign finance laws, I think they'd be right.
Well, you're just
right.
Assuming
if
the answer to the question. You're assuming the answer is that this ought to be treated as a partnership for FECA purposes.
Well, which doesn't strike me as unreasonable. I mean, this is a limited liability partnership, and it's possible that three commissioners take the view that despite that, the fact that they've elected to be taxed as a corporation in some states trumps that LLP status, and therefore they must be a corporation. But I didn't take that to be what was being said here. But it may be, in which case they are in a tough place. But it doesn't strike me as unreasonable that the commission would take their decision to structure themselves as an LLP to mean that they were a partnership. Vice Chairman Mason.
I don't think that decision would be unreasonable. But I think that in the face of a failure of the commission to agree on whether they're a partnership or a corporation for FECA purposes, that the answer that well, then it defaults to partnership doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because that's precisely the issue that's before us, is are they a partnership or a corporation for FECA purposes?
Yeah. Commissioner Walther.
Well, I think if I understand situation, I don't see how they could not be treated as a partnership in our eyes at this point, even though we're three of us are inclined to go a different direction because they made an IRS election to be taxed as a partnership as a corporation. I don't know. I don't, if we were advising them, which we're not, it just seems to me that they're a partnership until they're not in our eyes, and we haven't gotten there yet.
But the advice is precisely the point. I mean, I think we're obligated to advise them. And what I want to avoid, and that's why I brought this up, is I want to avoid having, if we deadlock on the opinion, I want to avoid them being put at some risk by proceeding. I mean, it strikes me that we all probably can agree that there ought to be some legal way for Holland & Knight to manage a political fund. Now, it might involve some kind of complex record keeping or reimbursements or something like that, some inconveniences they would rather avoid, but they ought to be able to do it, and it strikes me that they're entitled to some legally binding advice. And obviously, if the commission just can't give it, we just can't give it. And I can see where we are on the corporate partnership, but I wanted to raise this other issue because I think they're kind of entitled to be, to be told. And if we collectively think, well, that we're going to default back to partnership because that's the name, that's a little unsatisfactory to me. But it's better than leaving the issue unresolved. That's why I raised the question.
Well, a valid concern. Commissioner Weintraub.
I just want to say that I agree with the chairman on this. That the reason they asked the question is because they recognize that they want to treat themselves like a corporation. They need to get this advisory opinion from us. And in the absence of this advisory opinion, they are a partnership under state law, and that's what they are. We could say that we're willing to treat them as something else, but if we can't, then that's the default, I think.
So we seem to have three votes for that. Commissioner Von Spakovsky.
Well, I was going to suggest we take a five-minute break, although I'll say to the last comment of Commissioner Weintraub that we're a federal entity. I'd look to federal law first, not state law, and under federal law, they're treated as a corporation. But I suggest we take a five-minute break.
Okay, well, five-minute.
As we do, I think we ought to consider whether it's really in our purview to give further advice as to than what we're being asked at this point. And that's kind of where we seem like we're headed. Okay, we can't answer the opinion, so let's give another one. And I think that's a little bit maybe beyond the scope of where we ought to be today.
Okay. Former Chairman Toner used to say, the request for a five-minute recess is always in order, so we will take a short five-minute recess. Thank you. Back to into session or to order the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission for December 6th. We have before us the draft advisory opinion in 2007-25 involving Holland and Knight. We have had a short recess in which people could muse and reflect upon the issues before us, and we will now begin our discussion again. Vice Chairman Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Possibility I asked counsel about during the recess and discussed with a couple of my colleagues was whether we could issue an opinion that said the commission could not agree on your proper treatment, and in light of the failure to agree, if you proceed as a partnership, you may proceed as a partnership in conducting your political activities and relations with any non-connected committees. And the reason for that is to give them the legal certainty to go ahead and manage their political affairs without prejudging the decision if we have a different set of facts or a sixth commissioner or, you know, whatever a year or two from now, and not have to necessarily go to regulations at that point.
Okay. That seems like a reasonable solution for the matters at hand, but we will see what everyone thinks. Commissioner Walther?
I'm a little bit torn. I think that it's not a bad idea, except what are the implications if someone were to say, well, I the commission hasn't reached agreement on this, but it doesn't mean it's not wrong to continue as we're now treating ourselves as a corporation under federal law. We're going to go ahead and do it. And are we saying, okay, if you do that, we will prosecute? Or are we just saying that we haven't resolved what we will do at that point?
Vice Chairman Mason.
I was proposing that we give them a permissive, you may proceed as a partnership.
Without an implication as to what we do if they'd elected to move forward, because in their opinion, they can. I mean, are we basically,
I mean,
not?
I don't
not
know what they would base that opinion on.
Well, they have some support, but not enough.
As we've said, we're not always right. You know, they may find out in court we are wrong.
Commissioner Von Spakovsky.
I don't want to delay this any further, but I was told during the break that we really need to ask Joel Stolz, head of our audit department, about this, because someone told me they believe that there's a possibility that our audit folks already treat LLPs that elect corporate taxation as corporate entities. And if we are already doing that, and in fact I was told about one particular audit where they believed that some LLP money coming in was treated as corporate, if that is the case, I think we need to know about it before we make a final decision. I have asked our staff director, she's trying to get Mr. Stolz and get him or someone else from his office up here, and I also have my other staff working on it. But I think that's an important issue if part of our agency is already doing this.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard that there was an audit and that in which we found there were impermissible contributions from a partnership, and I'm not sure whether they were because they were the partnership was deemed a corporation, or because they were unattributed. Obviously, the partnership can give it attributes to particular people, and we can certainly sort that out. I think the other, a factor in all of this, which is worth reflecting upon, is what the effect on other LLPs that don't want to be treated as corporations for the purposes of FICA, but may have chosen corporate status under the tax laws, but relied upon their partnership status up until this point. And I assume that this decision would have some effect on them as well, which might be somewhat surprising to them. But so anyway, we can sort of proceed as the commission chooses. I mean, I think that the vice chairman has raised a reasonable solution. It would at least provide Holland Knight with some clarity at this point, and they could proceed if the will of the commission was to hold this matter over. We do have one more meeting before the end of the year, and obviously we could reflect upon this and learn a little more if we wanted to. But I will obviously, sort of seek the guidance of my fellow commissioners as how they would like to proceed on this. Commissioner Von Spakovsky.
I'm sorry, do we have more time to answer this AO? Could we do it next week when we?
Yes, our deadline is December 18th, so we do have more than a week.
We are moving more quickly than the statutory deadlines. It's a good sign.
Okay. I mean, I hate to put things off, Mr. Chairman, but I would like to get an answer to whether the left half of the agency is already dealing with this issue and treating it a particular way that the right half of the agency may not be aware of. It may be completely untrue, but without knowing the answer to that, I would feel very uncomfortable taking a vote one way or another on this.
I assume counsel's office doesn't know how the audit division has dealt with this in the particular matters involving Terrell or other audits.
No, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you.
Vice Chairman Mason.
I'd be happy to put it over and get some information as well. And I take it we have representatives from Holland & Knight here. And if they have comments on the alternative that I've suggested vis-a-vis partnership status as to whether that's important to them or whatever, then they have an opportunity to submit further information to the counsel's office in the intervening period. And I think that would be would help us as well.
Okay. Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Perhaps what we could do if this is going to be held over is have an additional week of comment time or whatever time frame you would.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent proposal, and certainly, either those in the room or others who would like to chime in on this. Obviously, the decision making on this is fluid, and we're always open to additional thoughts and comments. Is that acceptable? Hearing no dissent, I will then hold this matter over into our next meeting, which I believe is next Friday. And that brings to close the handling of the advisory opinions today. Council, thank you very much for your assistance on that. The last item on our agenda involves management and administrative matters, and I understand that we do, in fact, today have a management and administrative matter. Ms. Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have one matter, and our Chief Information Officer, Mr. Alec Palmer, is going to do a demonstration of our soon-to-debut, specifically on Monday, December 17th, on our website, our new Senate House application map, which piggybacks on the success of our presidential campaign map. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Palmer.
Good.
The little box there is not part of the presentation. Change the lamp. That will not be on our website. Apparently, that should go away in a minute or two, according to James Jones. So I wasn't sure if I was going to do hand puppets until that went away, but I did hear a rumor that the. chairman has a new dance routine that he was working on. I'm not sure if you want to do that now or not.
I would actually. That would be great. Thank you,
Alan. So my hands are tied until that goes away. Let me talk a little bit about the House and Senate map. We gave a presentation last Friday, Bob, right? Bob did an excellent job over at the press club giving the presentation. We had two sessions, there was even a two press reporters from Ukraine that were there with television cameras in campaign finance and how we tracked money in this country with donations. And actually, they had a very good time with a lot of good questions and asking us about our system. And actually, we're very surprised at the amount of data that we have. Their mission is to kind of take that back to the Ukraine. Very entertaining. Our homepage that you see here, once that middle box disappears, we're going to have basically, this is going to go live, as Katrina mentioned, on December 17th, Monday. And the homepage is going to have now both maps. You're going to have the presidential map, which of course is going to be on the left-hand side, and all of you are familiar with that. Then on the right-hand side is going to be the House and Senate map. What you can't see very well there right now is there's basically two colors to states. You have kind of the green states and kind of the beige-colored states. The green states are basically the active Senate races. And so that's going to be very visible at the beginning. When we can see it, it'll be very visible of how it looks. One thing that we have done that's different is on the presidential map, of course, it's based on geography of the contributors and for each presidential candidate in that particular state. So just as a recap, if you click on any presidential candidate, there we go, I can stop talking. All right, let's get to the show. So all the individuals will do that come to our website, if they want to go into the House and Senate map, they would click on that particular map, and then it brings up this page. As you see, there's basically about four elements to this page. You have the map on the left-hand side. On the right-hand side is a summary of basically House and Senate for all Democrat and Republicans and other categories. It gives the total for receipts and disbursements. Bottom left-hand, we've added a search box here, so if there's a particular candidate that you want to be able to get information on, you don't have to worry about going through the geography of going to the state and going to the district, things of that nature. You can just type in the name or the first four or five letters of that candidate's name, and you can get to that candidate. This is only basically for the 08 race, so this is all kind of 07, 08 candidates that we're looking at right now. So what you would do is, as you move your mouse over the map, you notice that certain information pops up and is highlighted. So whatever state you mouse over, it tells you basically how many House districts there are and the primary election date. The green, as I mentioned, is active Senate races. The non-green is there's no Senate race taking place. But let's go over to the state of Virginia. If we click on the state of Virginia, then it now launches the Virginia map. There's two maps. The one on the right-hand side, of course, is for the Senate. If you mouse over that, it tells you all the Senate candidates that are running in the state of Virginia. We also have some drop-down boxes here at the top, so if you know the district you want to go to right away, you can do that. Now, this is especially helpful for states like California and New York. When you get to LA, San Francisco, Manhattan, the districts are so small, it's hard to kind of show up on the map, so it's much easier to navigate with this. So that's why we added that capability. Or if you know the House candidate, you can click on that and go right to that individual. So let's go to the state of Virginia now. And of course, down here again is summary information for the state, similar to the information you saw on the first page for the entire country. But now this is summary information for the state of Virginia. If you mouse over now, the district information, it tells you the district number and the candidates that are running for the House. Let's go ahead and open now district number 5.
this page comes up. Here on this page, you see the top right-hand corner. It will always tell you the state you're in and district in, so if you happen to forget, it kind of highlights that for you. This table will give you all the candidates that are running in Virginia in district number 5. Here, the way that we have put this up, if we also have this pie chart. So, for example, for good, if you mouse over this pie chart, it basically tells you the percent of money that they've raised. Or you can actually go to this area right here for individuals. And if you click on individual, it will then launch a page that brings up all of the itemized individual contributors for this candidate. And you can, each one of these columns is sortable. So you can sort by last name, employee, city, state, whatever. If you want to then basically show all, you click on show all, and it lists all of the candidates. If you want to take this now and export this to an Excel spreadsheet, you just simply right-click, choose Export to Excel Spreadsheet, and you have all the data that was on that table in an Excel spreadsheet that you can now play with. So let's go ahead and close this. Let's go back a little bit now. These candidates, you can do the same thing for PAC. You can click on PAC, and it gives you all the information related to the PACs and the contributions for that particular candidate. A real neat feature that we've added is a compare feature. You've all been to BestBuy.com where you want to buy a computer and you want to compare computers. Well, now you can compare candidates. So you just highlight the candidates you want to compare, click on the compare button, and it brings up basically this page that gives you a candidate comparison. Starting at the top, you have cash on hand, then you have receipts, and then a whole category of receipts with individual PAC, party, et cetera. If you happen to forget the color code and basically which candidate this was, all you have to do is mouse over the bar, and it tells you what candidate that is. At this point, if you want, rather than going back to the page to go back to individual contributors to search on that, you can click on the bar, and guess what? It launches all the individual contributors for that candidate. So we've tried to really make it easy from a navigation standpoint to allow multiple points of entry to get to this data. Let's go to an individual now. And now let's just open up this candidate. If we click on this individual candidate, this brings up basically all of his detail page. Candidate details that you see at the top, receipts, total receipts, disbursements, loan, cash summary, everything. As you see basically these links, the hypertext, pretty much almost every place that you see dollars, we're going to have eventually about 15 or 17 categories that you will be able to drill down to individual data. Right now we only have about, on this particular candidate, we maybe have about 5 or 6. But really nice feature is that if you go ahead and click on operating expenditures, you can now see basically where the candidate is spending their money, the payee, and the purpose, the city, and you can all sort it. So this is something we've never really offered before. And you can really drill down. It's a great research tool to be able to get to all of this information. Bob, do you want to add any little tidbits of what this can do for us?
No, not really. I think that's covered it. What we try to do is provide access that virtually anybody can understand. You know where you live, you know the name of your member or candidates you're interested in at their particular races. So allow you visually to get from that knowledge very quickly to as much substantive information provided in these reports. And to do it in a way that's approachable for everybody. So that we can reach a broader audience. There are a lot of people who understand the nuances and the nuts and bolts of campaign finance, and we've always relied on them. I think this allows us to get beyond that audience as other audiences as well. Show people sort of the wealth of information really available here and that they can choose to use a lot of flexibility. We have some limitations to the process. There are some things that don't work quite this way. They mainly focus on Senate campaigns because the senators don't file electronically with us, and so that poses some challenges for us. But
those
But that day will come. And I may not get there with you, but I see it. And so we're hopeful that we're going to be able to integrate all of this information pretty quickly in that context. But we provide the information. It's just in a different form than in the way that we've always done it.
But the beauty of this now is with the type of graphical representation that we've put up, it makes it very easy for the general citizen to be able to get to this data, research it much better than we've ever provided before. And we also have some new data up there with the disbursements example that we showed you. And when we showed this last week, all the reporters were just really excited about that element. So this is, as I mentioned, we're gonna go live on December 17th. We're just tweaking the last few minute items, but we're very, very excited.
Okay, thank you, Alec, and all of your staff and Bob and everybody who helped put this together. I think it's excellent. I think it makes both, you know, it's a great extension of the work that was done earlier on the presidential data, and I think it just makes this data so much easier to search and use. It's just terrific. So thank you. Ms. Clark, are there any other management or administrative matters for us to handle today?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Good. And with that, I bring the meeting to a close. Thank you.
Thank you.